Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports.
Sports and Politics. It's me, it's Mr. FSP, and I'm not as cheery as I normally would be. If you haven't heard, a unnamed 25-year-old Kansas City Chiefs player allegedly shot and killed his girlfriend and proceeded to go to Arrowhead Stadium, meet with the head coach, Romeo Crennel, and the GM, Mr. Pioli, and in the parking lot, kill himself. It's not a pretty sight, to say the least. Not sure of all the details. Investigators are withholding a name, and details are sketchy. Let's go that way. Details are sketchy. But I got some sound here from that incident that I wanted to play for you. We have the police call. One of the assistant coaches talking about the situation prior to the individual killing himself.
One of my reporters had spoken to somebody on the chief staff who said that there were a couple of assistant coaches that were there at the time, and they were trying to calm the player down. He was very distraught, and they were unable to do that.
And as a consequence, the individual killed himself. Again, there's no name released at this point. I would venture to say there will be a name released some time today, and it's a sad case. There's a question as to whether or not the football game will be played tomorrow at Arrowhead Stadium. I think the game should go on. In my opinion, the tragedy is the young lady that was killed allegedly by this football player, and that should be mourned. Now, the player himself, we don't know the situation. We don't know what he was going through or anything like that. However, we do know that the individual was disturbed by something that caused him to do this to himself and allegedly to someone else. Right now, let's hear the police call on the situation.
At 8:10, the police were called to Arrowhead Stadium, the practice facility. Were there shortly after that. They found chief staffers. This is according to a Kansas City Police Department spokesperson. They found chief staffers and the player with a gun to his head in the parking lot. The officer got out of his car, heard a gunshot, and the player had killed himself.
It doesn't sound like it was a sporadic event. It sounds like there was some sort of issue going on with this player in his personal life. And I wouldn't say it's a well-known player, but it could be. At 25 years old, you've had to be in the league for, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years. Could be a free agent, could be, a special teamer. But if there is a person that is, let's say, a big-name star, they've identified Javon Belcher as the person. Javon Belcher is an individual that played special teams. He wasn't a big role player, but I'm reading a report right now going across ESPN that Javon Belcher is identified as the Chiefs football player that killed himself as well as allegedly killing his girlfriend. It's a sad, sad case. What goes on in the mind of the individual to do this to themselves and to someone else? Suicide is definitely not the answer. A murder and suicide definitely is not the answer. I mean, this has taken over the complete fabric of what we were going to do today on today's show. I mean, we were going to talk about the Big Ten. We were going to talk about the move from Maryland to the Big Ten, Ohio State going undefeated and what that means for next year. I think, of course, we'll get to that. But this story is tragic. I encourage you to call in and talk to me about it. The number if you want to dial in is 347-637-3220. Again, the number is 347-637-3220. And I can talk to you a little bit about suicide and things of this nature, because if you did not know, this is the time of year where suicides are prevalent. There are several big times during the winter, around Christmas time, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Then in the springtime, because the spring symbolizes new life, new beginnings, things of that nature, and these are times when people are not with their significant others, or they just don't feel loved. I'm only speculating. I am not attempting to label what this Mr. Belcher did, but if you killed his girlfriend and then he killed himself, you can only speculate that there was a relationship problem between he and her. Maybe she decided she no longer wanted to be with him. Maybe there was a financial issue. You never know. But apparently the mother of the girlfriend was present, and she's the one that called the police and said that her daughter had been shot and killed by a Kansas City Chiefs player. I hate to think of something as far as like Ray Caruth. If you guys are too young or you don't remember who Ray Caruth is, he was actually supposed to be the opposite receiver to Steve Smith. He is Steve Smith, except he's in prison for the rest of his life. Ray Caruth was a football player out of Colorado who got drafted in the NFL by the Carolina Panthers. I believe Steve Smith was drafted in the same time frame, if I'm not mistaken. And they were supposed to be complements to Musha Muhammad, another Carolina Panther wide receiver. And those three, because Musha came from Chicago, the Bears at the time, and it was supposed to be those three players. Ray Caruth shot and killed his then-girlfriend, who was pregnant by him at the time, and there was an issue of maybe he didn't want to be involved with the child. He didn't want some type of relationship with her, and the child would have been a tool the girl was going to use to keep him involved with her. And this has come out in court. So Mr. Carruth then decided to hire some of his friends to kill her. And by killing her, the baby would die. Well, the baby did not die. The baby is living. There are issues with the child. And Ray Carruth has and was convicted of murder and attempted murder, and now is serving a life sentence, 25 to life, in a state penitentiary in the state of North Carolina. I say this only as a parallel to what today's events happen, and I can only speculate on why Mr. Belcher did what he did. I have no proof of him doing this. But it brings me back to the Ray Carruth situation, where Carruth hired those guys to kill the girl and the baby, and it didn't take place. Well, it did take place, but he got caught. I have my cousin on the line, but I see he just jumped off. Hopefully he calls right back. But this is terrible. These events are terrible. It's like you don't know what to do with people. Put your hands on my face. That was me dealing with one of my children. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at the situation. I'm not going to get rid of my kids and, you know, do things like that. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on that people need to understand. And I'm going to put you guys on hold for 1 second. All right, sorry for that brief interruption. But Mr. Belcher, he obviously was disturbed by something that he decided he needed to end the life of his girlfriend and himself. I'm not sure exactly how he came to that conclusion. Depression is a very, very serious issue to deal with. What drives someone to do such things? Access to weapons. I'm not going to blame it on the weapon, because a weapon is an instrument that people use to kill. The weapon isn't the killer. I'm not a proponent of, you know, guns and stuff like that, but, you know, when you have access to them, or anything, a blunt object for that matter, and you're not in your right state of mind, the damage that you or anyone can inflict on someone else is immense. So until I get a little bit more information, I'm going to shelve this conversation about the Kansas City Chiefs player, Javon Belcher, who allegedly killed his girlfriend and went to the stadium and in the parking lot, killed himself. Apparently the gentleman talked to Romeo Crennel and Ms. Fioli and thanked them for given an opportunity to play in the NFL, and then he killed himself as a police officer was coming to the scene to try to defuse the situation. But think about it. Around these times, don't let depression, don't let it get you down. Times are sad, but don't let it get you down. Is it really worth it? That's all I got to say about that. Again, once we get more information in, I'll talk more about it, but that's late breaking news right now in the world of sports. I'm doing the show solo, as you can tell. This episode, I'm going to talk about Maryland leaving the ACC for the Big Ten, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Big Ten title game, and is Ohio State going to be next year's number one? Or do they have the right to be next year's number one in college football? What's going on with the Spurs? How I think that David Stern and the NBA has overstepped its bounds and fining a team for not playing its star players. When is it a crime or illegal or a issue to not play your star players? I guess when David Stern says, I want you to play your star players since it's a nationally televised game. We'll talk about that. I've got some NFL analysis and some picks on the way. Again, if you want to call in and talk about any subject matter that we got going on or maybe one that you want to bring up, you can always dial 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. Let's get right into it, shall we? Let me do this. I'm going to talk a little baseball first. R.A. Dickey of the New York Mets, he's new Cy Young winner for the National League. A knuckleballer, okay? A knuckleballer is a Cy Young winner for the National League. Dickey did a good job. He did a very good job. This has been a wacky year in baseball. The Tigers, who were built and designed to go to the World Series and win it this year, they went but got promptly swept by the San Francisco Giants. So, you know, to have R.A. Dickey win the Cy Young this year is pretty around the same amount craziness. Here's Mr. Dickey on what's going to happen next.
Obviously, Dickey sort of proposed himself as part of a two-player package with Wright as a foundation of the Mets going forward, trying to become a contending team again for the first time in a long time. But I would not be surprised either way if the Mets traded Dickey or if they decided to sign him to a two-year extension.
So, the knuckleballer wins a Cy Young. He then becomes possibly part of a trade deal. Also, he could be the foundation. Do you want R.A. Dickey to be the foundation of your team? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think so. What's up, cousin? Thanks for calling in. Are you catching up on today's events in sports, or you want to talk about R.A. Dickey winning Cy Young?
Nah, I want to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, Bama. They're off themselves.
You got to be a Bama. Okay. All right. Well, we're talking about that. I was talking about that a few minutes ago. Pretty much the situation is, and I'm only speculating, I was using the Ray Carruth situation as a possible foundation for why this took place. Well, the guy, Javon Belcher, who is a special teamer, linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, apparently and allegedly had a dispute with his girlfriend at her house, brandished a weapon, and killed her in front of her mother, and allegedly then drove to Arrowhead Stadium and spoke with some of the officials of the Chiefs and killed himself as the police were pulling up to try to defuse the situation.
Wow. Just wow. Just wow, man. Oh, what's going on with today, man? I'm just tired of hearing stories like that. So sick of it. So sick of it. I just can't see why you would just devalue your own life like that. You know what I'm saying? Every single day that you get up is a blessing. Every moment, this moment that we have right now, that you're taking advantage of right now. You understand my voice? If you're taking advantage of breathing the air that you're breathing right now, you are blessed. I don't get why somebody would do something like this. I really don't. And I'm interested to see, you know, what transpires and what, you know, what new information and revelation that they come up with. But good gracious.
Well, see, I'm only speculating on it, but to kill the girlfriend, again, around this time of the year, suicides are prevalent around this time of year. But only speculation here. I think maybe there was an issue with her and him. She wanted to leave him or something like that. Or maybe she... Again, there was a Ray Cruz situation where he was going to be cornered by a baby and some other stuff, and he decided to take matters into his own hands and kill her.
I'm not going to speculate like that, because that would just be looking at the lowest possible thing of him. You know, whatever information will be revealed to us, it'll reveal itself of, you know, who and what he was thinking or why he was thinking.
Well,
so.
I see that, but here's my thinking, Mike. Okay, we've both been in relationships. I'm currently married. You've been there, right? So what would push, I mean, I want to, you know, choke the crap out of my wife sometimes, some of the stuff she does and says, but I don't. But what will push someone to that point? Now, again, we don't know his mental state at the time or previously, but what will push someone to do something like that?
I mean, there's a whole host of things, Vic. There's a whole host of things. And trust me, I run the gamut with just talking to people about, you know, issues like this, domestic violence, and what would draw the ire of a woman, what would draw the ire of a man, and, you know, in a marriage and stuff like that. There's so many different dynamics that you just have to let it all reveal itself, you know? I mean, because you don't know what drove him there. You don't know what she was driving at, what her angle was, or you don't know his mental state. Then again, it could have been her mental state. Then again, it could have been a multitude of different things. But, you know, the relationship between a man and a woman is never, it is never something that is easily understood. You know what I mean? It's not easily communicated and it's not easily understood. But we all know what it's about. It's like, It's a crazy conundrum. It's like it's easy as 1, 2, 3, but explaining it is complex as hell. Excuse my language.
Mm-hmm. No, you're fine. Well, I'm not sure what took place, but it's like the Midwest is going through a whole bunch of crazy stuff right now. Kind of glad I'm not in the Midwest.
Vic, it's the Midwest. It's out there in Cali. It's definitely out here in D.C. It's not something that's just immune to certain areas.
Oh, I know. I know.
I mean, you know, Chicago is just off the chain. D.C. been off the chain. And, you know, some other parts of the Midwest and the South is just ridiculous. But
yeah.
I just, But I'm not one of these people that, you know, that just refuses to hope or refuses to look at, you know, the beauty and the respect and the good things that's out here. But because there is a lot of stuff out here that'll just make your mind just flip to another direction.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying about this guy, Mr. Belcher. I have no idea what it is that made his switch flick. You know, something did. And he went off the deep end. But let's move on. I want to talk to you a little bit about what we were talking about yesterday on the Mac, No Chaser, with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor. Because you guys were shouting so much, we really didn't get into the Big Ten. We got a bunch of, emotional. Are you speaking emotional? You know, we got a lot of that going. But what I want to get to is the shaping and the shifting of college football or college sports is being driven by football. You know, not every college football team or school joins the same conference. For instance, like Notre Dame, their basketball program is in the Big East, but I think they moved to the ACC, I'm not sure. But their college football team is independent. So when you see a school like Maryland, and Rutgers, who's supposedly moving to the Big Ten, doing that, you know, what does that signify to you as the foreseeable future for college sports and college football in general? I mean, in specific.
I mean, I have no idea. They definitely are going to wind up doing a lot more consolidation. Because I just don't see how they're going to be able to, you know, have so many different conferences and it just not be a simple, you know, one simple umbrella. Because at the end of the day, they all want the same thing. They want more money, more exposure, more TV, more recruits. And you know, in one aspect, you want to be one of these powerhouse colleges, and you can have that pool and have that money and have those recruits. But on the other, you know, but on the flip side, you could be one of these, one of these small schools, and just kind of just like, okay, y'all come pick us up. We'll take the little, you know, we'll take a little cash here and there, and you know, that could be quite profitable for a school. It's
well,
a delicate dance, though.
Yeah, because I look at a team like, is it Morehead? The colleges up in Baltimore, where the head coach, and I don't know if you heard anything about this, the head coach, I think it's Morehead, if I'm not mistaken, he learned that he was getting fired by the college through an email that wasn't supposed to go to him. The email details, it was the athletic director sending an email to the vice president of student affairs of the school saying, this is how we're going to, you know, get our new coach. We're going to have the new coach in by January, da-da-da-da-da. And he inadvertently CC'd the current head coach. Now, that's another topic in itself. We can get to that in a minute. But they received a lot of money for being the cupcake schools on, you know, a team like, let's say, Michigan or Notre Dame. You know, they would get maybe $50,000, $60,000 to go play Notre Dame, get their butts whooped, and go home. You know, so that coach, in a way, he raised a lot of money for the university, but he has a losing record, 3 seasons of consecutive losses. But because of the teams they've played, the big-name teams that they've played, they got, you know, enough money to fund their athletic program, to fund whatever it is that the university uses money for.
Right.
And that's part of the deal we're talking about. Once these schools join these big conferences, you're not going to have those cupcake programs to play anymore, because you're going to have to play Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. And by the way, I will say this. Penn State and Maryland will become one of the biggest rivalries in Big
You think
history.
So?
Yes.
You think so?
I do. And I'm going to tell you why.
Penn State and Maryland?
Yes. The reason why I say it is because they're competing for some of the same talent. Pitt, Penn State, and Maryland are competing for some of the same talent in the same area. Think about it. Penn State grabs people from Maryland, from D.C., from Virginia. They get some big nasties from all over the world, all over the country, but mainly in that general area. And now that Maryland's within that conference and they're going to be in that division, that is going to be one of the biggest rivalries in Big Ten history.
I'm sorry. You said Penn State. I don't know why. I don't know why in my head I was thinking Notre Dame. I'm lunching. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, I can see what you're talking about. Yeah, Penn State. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Because you're right. They do. Penn State does grab a lot of young folks from, you know, this area, and so does Maryland. And you know, for a long time, Maryland wasn't doing that here. And
no.
I couldn't understand that. I could not
understand
that.
Their own players in the state.
Right. To a certain extent, they still don't. But
yeah.
It's better than it was in the past.
Yeah, you're right. It is better than it was in the past. I mean, like when Kevin Durant decided to go to the University of Texas, you know, that could have been Maryland's next Len Bias. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, he could have been greater than Len Bias.
Mm-hmm. You know, but he went to the University of Texas, played in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to talk real quick, just on the Big Ten, about the Nebraska-Wisconsin Big Ten championship. And again, this goes back to how does Ohio State look next year? If this was a one-year suspension and stuff like that, maybe they might be ranked preseason number one. And if it were for 2 years, if they go 12-0 again, will it all be for not yet again because they don't have any bowls or anything like that they can play in? Let's hear from Bo Pelini, Nebraska's head coach, on playing Wisconsin for the Big Ten title.
The type of character I believe you got to have a good football team. You know, we've won games about in every way imaginable here, and we've had some comebacks. We've behind the eight ball a couple times in the second half, and you're only able to overcome things like that if you have good character, good leadership, a belief in team, and a strong-willed group, and I think we have that.
That's Bo Pelini of Nebraska. Talking about it, excuse me, of Wisconsin, talking about, Bo Pelini of Nebraska talking about his team facing Wisconsin. Here's the head coach of Wisconsin talking about playing Nebraska.
If we'd won all five of the games we lost, we'd still be playing Nebraska for an opportunity to win a Big Ten championship. So how we got here really doesn't matter. I thought our kids have been kind of answering that question all week. And you know, now that we're here, you know, I can't speak on behalf of Nebraska, but I know we really don't care how we got here or who we're playing. We just want to play the person that we're playing, Nebraska, and our kids will be amped and ready to roll.
So, Michael, I'm talking about Ohio State could have and should have been playing in this game for the right to play Notre Dame in the national championship game. You heard the coach of Wisconsin say they lost five games. But yet,
right.
They're playing for the Big Ten title, which then propels them to a BCS title game in the Rose Bowl against either Stanford or UCLA. Now, they've got 5 losses on a 12-game season. And if you look at the Big East, Connecticut or Rutgers, I believe it's going to be Rutgers, gets an automatic berth in a BCS bowl game because they won the Big East. And then they're going to play Georgia Tech or Florida State. Now, Florida State's ranked, you know, within the top 20 or the top 15. But realistically, their BCS bowl game doesn't give them any, if they win, it doesn't give them any real right to claim a national title, a piece of the national title, because they have so many losses. So,
Who?
Florida State. They have
okay.
3 losses, 2 or 3 losses, if I'm not mistaken, if they beat Georgia Tech. And then they go on to, I think it's the Citrus Bowl, I believe, and play. If they beat Georgia Tech, they go to Citrus Bowl or Orange Bowl and plays somebody else. I can't remember who it is, but they'll play somebody. But you got a lot of teams over here that are struggling to make it to, you know, a national championship, and you don't have a clear-cut path. Like, for instance, last night, Stanford played UCLA, and, you know, Stanford ends up winning that game, and now Stanford goes to play in the freaking Rose Bowl versus Wisconsin or Nebraska. But none of those teams have a shot at being a national champion, whereas Ohio State, they do, or did, because they went 12-0. Is it really time for a bowl system, a playoff to get now, or did the season work out so well that, yes, Notre Dame's number one, and either Alabama or Georgia automatically gets to play them in the national championship game?
Yeah, they need a playoff system. I mean,
well, it's coming in 2014, but I'm asking this year because of the way Nebraska and Wisconsin they have very bad records. Well, not very bad, but their records aren't that good. But they're getting a BCS bowl game that, you know, has some implications for the national title.
They need to. They really need it bad, Vic. They need it very, very bad.
Okay, I mean, the money's there. The bowl situation won't change. But I'm looking at Wisconsin and Nebraska's going to play tonight, and I'm like, Nebraska's ranked number 12. Wisconsin's not even ranked. But the winner of that game plays in the BCS bowl game.
Man, that's not. I mean, it's not right. It's not fair. This is why they need this. But for whatever reason, whatever monetary reason, they're just not gonna. They have not done this. This is not rocket science. It's not. It is not. It's. You know what? You, I, and Mac and Jerry could sit down in about 20 minutes at Starbucks and figure this out. Because it's not that hard. It ain't. It is not that hard. You come up with a playoff system. You know what I'm saying? You come in, you do the play-in. You could even do it like they do March Madness. Why can't they do it like March Madness?
Money. Money. We talked about it
yesterday. I know. I understand that. But why can't, like, each one of the rounds be like a bowl?
I agree, and that's what it should be. But because all of the high BCS bowl games are played like 2-3 days apart, it becomes, okay, well, how do you value these bowl games now? Okay, the play-in game is going to be what, the Orange Bowl, even though it's a BCS bowl? You know, it becomes an issue of value. Now, Nick Saban of Alabama, who's got an opportunity yet again to take Alabama to a national championship game, plays Georgia today. And, you know, he's saying the secret to him consistently being in the national championship hunt is being consistent.
But consistency in performance is what defines success, and I think that's the most difficult thing to get any team to do, especially guys that are student-athletes at the college level, to be able to focus and play to a standard week in and week out.
And that's part of his, you know, contention. He's one of those guys that said we need a playoff system, you know.
Right. And I mean, because I do not value how he's saying that, you know, consistently performing, you know, at a level of success brings more success when I can't label you as successful because I don't know what type of system y'all got going on. And then you keep changing, and then you got the polls, and you got the BCS, and you're playing here, and you're going up. Nah, Slim, I'm just not feeling it. I just look at college, I'm like, okay, let me see the recruits, let me see these youngins, let me see who the star is, who could play, who could not play. Really, because that, I mean, I look at the game now like a scout. I just want to see who's the next thing coming. That's it. Please, just show me that. I don't even want to see the competition. Now, I get it because, you know, I'm a college grad. I've been to college and stuff, and I would love to see, you know, my alma mater doing this and doing that. And, you know, that it forces that camaraderie, and you want to see them play against somebody and beat somebody, and if they've been losing and then they beat their arch enemy, I get it. But it's just, how can you define the success when you don't have a good model that you're utilizing or a system that you're playing through to define the success? Which you define the success by you being 10-0, 12-0, and 6 of the 7 teams are cupcakes, and you know four. The other four are in the top five of the college rankings. I mean, really?
Well, see, that's part of the issue with SEC, and that goes back to the previous discussion we were having about these mega conferences, because the SEC is regarded as one step below playing in the NFL, and apparently. Mm. Unofficially, you know, that's where all the country's top talent plays, and everyone else is a stepchild to, you know, as far as athletics go. And when you have a team such as Alabama going 12-0 in the SEC, or Georgia going 12-0, both of them are 11-1, and they play today at 4:00. In an SEC title game. But that's like gauging, saying, here's how you're going to gauge your success. This conference is regarded as the best conference in college football, bar none. And for us to consistently be on this level and consistently vie for a national championship, that's how you can gauge our success. That we are a successful, school. Now it's Morgan's, the college I'm talking about where the head coach got the letter is Morgan. The email, Morgan. How do you rate their success? You know, you can say, let's use them for example. Let's just say they went undefeated 3 years in a row in their conference.
Uh-huh.
You know, historically black college, where do they rank? Where do their conferences rank on the scale of collegiate athletics? You know, does that mean that coach is that good that he deserves an opportunity to coach in the NFL or take over at a big university? Because I can recall where there was a coach at the University of Buffalo a couple years ago. He took it. The school over. Buffalo has not won one game in I think, 7 or 8 years. He comes in and he takes him to an undefeated season, wins the championship, comes back the next year, they go to a championship, they have one loss, and then he gets selected to coach the University of Kansas. After 1 year at Kansas, he's fired. So, you know, how do you gauge success in these universities and coaches and these teams? And here's my suggestion, or here's my thought process on it. Since the SEC is regarded as the best conference in the country, I can agree with Nick Saban. So you and I would disagree. I think he's correct in saying, you know, the consistent success that they have is driven on and is a prerequisite for their success because they play in a conference that is so hyped. Just like if you look at the ACC in basketball.
I get that, but you don't know definitively. You don't know definitively.
You don't.
You know, it's based off of
where the talent
is. It's based off of a theory. It's based off of a theory that the talent, the best talent, is here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a theory, and in my opinion, is subject to flaw because there could be some little coach somewhere in some obscure school that has coached up these kids, and he may be so hyped up, and they may just be able to beat one of these squads. I mean, it's possible. It's possible. You know, but you don't know for sure because you got 11-1 teams over here in the SEC, but, you know, it could be somebody over here in the Big East that's, you know, 11-1 that they never even played before. I don't like that.
The playoff system would handle that.
Huh?
The playoff system would handle that.
A playoff system would remedy that quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Well,
quickly.
You know, since we're talking about, you know, teams from different conferences playing versus the SEC, we talked about it briefly yesterday, how Johnny Manziel, a.k.a. Johnny Heisman, or Johnny Football, has taken Texas A&M from the Big 12 to the SEC, and there they got 10 games. They're 10-2 in the conference. Well, here's the Heisman Trophy candidate on his Heisman hopes. You know, there have been, I think, maybe one freshman to ever win the Heisman. Here's what his thoughts on it.
It's something that I can only dream about, and really looking back and thinking about the past, it's only been something that, I mean, you play video games, you think about it, you see Cam Newton, Robert Griffin win it, and the rest of the elite group that's won it, and you can only dream about doing something like that and really hoisting that trophy. I haven't thought about it.
So here's my question, Mike. Since we're talking about superior, you know, conferences and stuff, if Manziel and Texas A&M stayed in the Big 12 and never played Bama this year and beat them, will we be talking about this kid as being a possible Heisman Trophy candidate? Because the Big 12 competition is good, but it's not the SEC.
Probably not. Because I guess it gave it, you know, his performance and the team's performance more credibility, you know, because of you know, everyone, if another team is playing someone in the SEC or the tops of the SEC, everyone's gonna be paying attention. You know what I mean? Because supposedly, like you said, the best talent is in the SEC.
And to knock off the number one team in the country and do it convincingly, you know, he was a one-man show, so to speak. This kid put up a huge performance, and he's a freshman, fresh out of high school. And this would go into that line of conversation we were having yesterday. I know Mac's not here, but you and I can argue this for a few minutes because we have differing viewpoints. Let's use Johnny Manziel on it. He's a freshman, comes to the school, and his jersey sells. Remember I told you guys yesterday that the university attempted to trademark the name Johnny Football or Mr. Football, whatever it is, but his parents beat the university to it. So any proceeds that are made go to his parents because they trademarked the name, which
right.
means that Manziel gets the money, you know? Well, we're talking about the university selling his jersey, him not getting any portion of it, or the school benefits from it, and other student-athletes benefit from it, but he does not receive any monetary value.
Mm-hmm.
So let's set it up for the folks that are listening who didn't listen yesterday. One train of thought was, and this was mine and Max, and I kind of agree with it, is to set up a trust for the student as he or she generates more revenue for the university. You know, he or she receives a certain portion of the funds monthly or weekly, whatever it is, and the remaining portion goes into an account that sits there until the individual either graduates or leaves to go to the NFL. And it's a way of, I guess, helping the young man or young woman have some money in their pocket during the football season, during their time in college, and having a portion of that or the bulk of it for him or her once they leave the university or go to the next level. And Mac equated it to Social Security. And you guys went off on an emotional tangent, but I thought that was a good point. Because he asked you, do you believe in the Social Security system? And you said it's not going to be around, you know, by the time our kids get to it. But it's a form of a Social Security system, but it's considered a trust. Because, yes, you're going to get a portion of it now and spend it on whatever you want to spend it on. But the rest of it you get to save for once you leave the college and go wherever you're going to go. Now, a lot of that money also is used to help out in the other athletic sports and the athletic department. But I want you to tell the folks what you think, Mike, about that idea and what you think should happen.
First of all, I mean, him equating it to Social Security is just, like, ludicrous, especially coming from him as a Republican. And it's just outrageous. Because of the simple fact, look at where Social Security is now. You know, I don't think that that model is good because it does not represent any type of it does not represent freedom. It doesn't. It represents control, which is the whole problem. Which is, you know, and with the NCAA being the crooks that they are, they're gonna want something to do that. Now, in theory, applying that would be really nice, but I don't trust them. I don't trust them to set it up, and I don't trust them to have access to it or putting it together. None of that. I just do not see or feel that they would set up something like that for the benefit of the child that won't in turn benefit them as well. I just think that's a fallacy.
I think that's a whatever money.
Huh?
I think that they would take the interest off of whatever money.
Yeah,
they
but
did
see that.
Them.
See, but see that's the whole problem, Vic. Once their hands are in it, it's an issue. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's a big issue. Just like, you know, with Social Security. Thank God they didn't put it out into the open market back when Bush was president, because we were all, I mean, it would be totally destroyed now. You know, that's the problem. They keep putting their hands in something that they ain't got no business putting their hands in. And I don't trust the NCAA not to put their hands in it, Slim. I just don't.
I got one clarification. Matt claims to be independent, not Republican. His views lean Republican, but he claims.
His views lean Republican. That's why, I mean, from, you know, from his positioning on a lot of conversations that we've had, that's what I'm basing it off. I know he's an independent. I know he is, but he very much leans towards Republican, and he also leans on self-reliance, which is you know, highly contradictory in my point of view, because if you have a child, I applaud his parents, that young man's parents. I applaud him because they took it upon themselves and took it from the school. You know, the school was looking out for their best interest. They weren't looking out for that young man's best interest. You know, they were looking out for how they were going to capitalize and how they were going to make money. And the truth of the matter is, you know, I get it that there aren't kids out there that, you know, have access to that. And, you know, they're going to be susceptible to a whole lot of different thieves and schemers and agents that just mean them no good. I totally understand that. There should be some type of counsel that these kids can receive and stuff like that. I'm all for that. But if the NCAA's got something to do with it, I ain't down. I'm not down.
Well, you know, I thought it was a rather interesting commentary because we can examine how our political system and sports are intertangled.
Way more intertwined than a lot of folks really believe or really know.
Exactly.
You know.
So whenever Congress decides they want to make a panel on, you know, on the playoff system in college football, you know, that says a lot. You want to convene an actual council to discuss a playoff system in college football.
Like I told you, you know, this stuff isn't rocket science. Like I told you, even with all of the debating and bickering and that me and Mac do, you, I, Mac, and Jerry can still sit around and come up with something better than what's going on now. We can come up with something better, quicker, and faster. When they have these councils that convene to discuss something, they stalling. And in my opinion, they just shucking and jabbing because this stuff is not hard. Come up with something, and let's go with it, and come up with something real. But, you know, it's just the problem is too many people that's trying to get their hands into the pie and trying to stick their beaks with some type of trickle of the money that is just ridiculous. So you've got to, you know, take that into consideration. I mean, like the theory that you guys put out, it's nothing wrong with it. Only problem is how are you going to get the NCAA to bite in? How are you going to get the colleges to bite in? You know what I mean? Where's their piece going to come in? And they're going to be like, yo, we're giving them an education. We're giving them a stipend. No, we're not doing that. We're trying to get paid. I mean, so I just don't see it. I don't see it.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. It can be an issue that comes about, and the money is a driving force that folks are not going to agree with. And, you know, it's hard to have a one-shot, one-kill solution for the NCAA and college football.
I mean, because there's a lot of moving parts. there's a whole lot of moving on.
Then get it done for basketball, and if one level below NCAA, I think it's D2, D3, I don't know what they call it nowadays, if they can make it work, you know, the upper level should be able to make it work. As you said, we all can sit in one room and get it done. It just depends on who's willing to work towards that goal.
Right.
So let's move on. We got 30 minutes left of live. They're exactly 30 minutes. And let's get to some football. Let's talk about some pro football real quick. No. I promised the folks I would talk a little bit about the Spurs situation. We touched upon it yesterday. We didn't go very deep into it. But with David Stern outstretching his arms on the Spurs issue, is that something that could be actually considered unconstitutional, even though the NBA doesn't fall under freedom of speech, freedom of whatever? Do you see a suit of some sort being brought against the NBA by the San Antonio Spurs?
No. I mean, because, I don't see it being something unconstitutional or anything like that. No. I just think Popovich and the Spurs made a judgment call for their franchise and their business and their assets. But the problem was that it conflicted with the overall NBA's assets. So basically, what I was trying to get out to you guys last night, you know, you just can't upset the slave masters, man. You can't do that.
Oh my gosh.
You can't do it.
And for that dude to be dropping the N bomb every other time, I was like, the show is no chaser, and it's already geared toward mature audiences. So, you know, I can't sell him to any network. I can sell him to Sirius XM, but I can't sell him to like Fox or nothing because they'd love to have
him. You ain't gonna be able to do that. You're gonna have to get them to come to you. That's what you're gonna have to do. You're gonna have to get them to come to you, baby boy. I learned that a long time ago.
Well, I'm gonna talk to one of my dudes that had a show here on Blog Talk Radio. We're going on the same path, but he got picked up by ESPN to do his show on ESPN radio station. Down in, I believe, Carolina. So I'm hoping to catch somebody here like that. Maybe when I'm no longer in my current job, somebody will offer me that because of who I work for. I can't really do certain things.
Well, you know, like I kind of fall where Mac falls at. You know, you got to make your own opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
You got to make yours.
No doubt.
You got to make it. And with the technology that's out here now, it's almost criminal not to use it. You know? It's almost criminal not to use it. I mean, we just went over 120,000 listeners.
Welcome to the club.
Well, I mean, but the thing of it is you know, I realize and I understand that I've got to get up off of Blog Talk, and I've got to diversify in a lot of different ways because social media is just, you know, it's just real strong.
It's the investment that a lot of folks are looking into putting their money in. And doing things on. Like, Sirius would be the next thing, but you have to buy your franchise and all that other stuff, and I ain't got that type of money. But anyway, let's move into these games. We got about 25 minutes left alive there, and it's Azure's birthday weekend, so I got some stuff planned for
Happy birthday, Azure.
Yeah, you know she's a cougar, getting me. I'm younger than she is. 6 months younger, but hey, whatever. Anyway, first game of the week, we're talking about two teams that like to run the ball. Both of their backs are kind of nicked up, though. Talking about Seattle going to Chicago. Seattle really does not have a very good road record. They're pretty bad on the road, pretty bad. They're going to Chicago where Matt Forte is dealing with an ankle injury again, although he promises he's going to play this week. Michael Bush stepped in last week and performed admirably, getting 2 touchdowns on 21 carries and 80-something yards. Marshawn Lynch is going to have to work very hard to run against this Chicago Bears defense. Now, Sidney Rice is familiar with the Chicago Bears defense and their corners, but his quarterback isn't. Russell Wilson, the rookie quarterback from Wisconsin. In my opinion, Seattle needs to throw the ball on Chicago to loosen them up for the run. That goes counter to what Pete Carroll likes to do. He likes to run Marshawn Lynch, just run him, and then throw when you have to. I think in this particular game, Seattle has to throw the ball first in order to make room for Marshawn Lynch. With that being said, and the philosophy that Pete Carroll has, I'm going to pick Chicago to win this one in a close game. Close game. What do you think is going to happen, Mike?
I don't know. I understand what you're talking about. I understand that strategy. But I also understand what Pete Carroll's doing. You know, he does have a rookie quarterback out there. So he's got to temper that a lot with a lot of that running game. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to bode too well for Seattle in this game, especially, you know, they're in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to bode too well. I mean, the running game, it's going to be kind of hard to run straight up with the Bears. I don't know about that defensive line. Are they nicked up?
For the Bears?
Yeah.
Now, their defensive players are pretty healthy. They're trying to work with their offensive line, though.
That's their problem. Their offensive line. Ooh, and then Seattle's defensive line is nasty.
Yeah. Yes,
oh,
they
those
are
some nasty dudes.
Yes,
so
they are.
I don't know. So this
but
game,
they don't
I think
play well on the road.
No, they don't. But I still think it's going to be a close game. I think Chicago is going to eke it out. Is Cutler starting?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, Chicago should take this. They should take it. They should eke it out, something like 17-10 or 17-13 or 14, something like that.
Okay. I'm with you on that. I think that sounds about right. Let's move on to Tennessee, where the Texans come to town. And as of late, the Texans defense has been pretty banged up and pretty sluggish. They've got a lot of injuries on the defensive side of the ball. Two teams that they should have totally demolished took them into overtime, and I'm talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Detroit Lions, took Houston into overtime, and they played 10 quarters within a 4 or 5 day period. So they've had time to rest, and they're going against Tennessee, a division opponent, who is having a lot of struggles themselves. They just fired the offensive coordinator, Palmer, and elevated the QB coach up to the offensive coordinator. Jake Locker is a pretty good player. Chris Johnson just can't get it done this year. I don't know what's going on. Kenny Britt's continually dealing with his bad knees. Houston should run wild all over Tennessee. But with, you know, Tennessee having issues on the defensive side of the ball with injuries and the last two games that they should have walked away with, they've struggled with, it wouldn't surprise me if this was a close game. But I want to pick Houston to win this by 14 points. What you got?
I think the Texans will find a way to get to eat this out. I think those two overtime games were, they just spread themselves a little thin. They still had that next man up approach, and they kind of got it done. I just have no faith in the Titans. I really don't. I really think they saw. What's their record? 2-7
I don't even know, dude. It's something like this. Not 2-7 This has been 12 games. They're like 2-10 something like that.
Or 3-9 something like that. Yeah, they just they're just horrible. I don't have no faith in them. I don't know what they was thinking when they let Jeff Fisher go. I really don't. No.
Okay.
I like Houston to kind of even with all the woes and the struggles on defense, that offense is they're playing. You know, if they've got a healthy Schaub, a healthy Arian Foster, and Andre Johnson, they're good. I think they're good. That's good enough for the Titans. That's good enough to give the Titans enough fits and. I think if they hang 24 on them, that's it. That's game.
Okay. Let's move on to another game that should be relatively easy, but history says that it's going to be a slugfest. The Patriots go to Miami and take on the Dolphins. The Dolphins haven't looked good as of late. The Patriots are surging right now. They're not talked about that much because talking more about Atlanta and the NFC playoff picture, but don't be surprised if the Patriots sneak up on everybody and just totally, start mollywopping folks.
The Patriots don't surprise me. That's how they play, man. They do this every year.
Exactly. Yeah. But, they're in a tight race in the AFC East, though, right now. It's like one or two games that separates them from everybody else. Normally, they've got like a 3 or 4 game lead, and it's all but done. This year, it's not that way. But I'm picking Patriots to win the game.
Wait a minute, you got Buffalo, you got the Jets, and you got Miami.
And Miami is next in line.
So who have they lost to out of those three?
I don't think they lost games to these guys. But they lost games to other players, to other teams. So the division, I believe their division is, pretty strong. It's their division record, but it's the conference record. Whereas they've lost maybe, I think the Patriots lost three or four games, something like that. And the Dolphins have lost 6. So if the Dolphins win this game, they're only one game out, and they got to play the Patriots again.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to win. They're not going to win. The Patriots are going to take that division. They're going to take that division. I like the little younger Tannehill, and his offensive coordinator. I don't like the coach down there.
I think the players like him either.
No, I don't think no. I don't think anybody likes him, man. Y'all can catch me on Wednesday nights on Grown Souls and Real Talk, and I'll be happy to do it. Happy to explain to you exactly why I don't like him and why the players don't like him. But I'm not gonna get into it on my cousin's show. I'm trying to behave myself for him.
Go ahead.
I don't think they have enough for the Patriots. The Patriots, for them to have a bad season, that's 11-6 and not make the playoffs. I mean, really? So no, I just don't see it. I think
I think they're going to, because they already whooped up on the Jets, and they're going to whoop up on them again. Don't they got to play them again?
They beat the Jets twice already.
Oh, they beat them twice? Oh, it's over. It's over. It's over. So, I mean, as long as they have, the better conference record, that trumps. I mean, the better division record. You know, that trumps the conference record.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. No, because if they have the same record, then the division comes into play. But they're not going to have the same. Well, they're going to have the same record as if the Patriots lose. If they end up 10-6, and Miami ends up 10-6, that's the only way that the division record is going to come into play, because right now they're sitting on top of their division. But let's move to another game that's really interesting.
Hold on. Let me ask you this real quick. So you're saying to me that if a team goes 6-0 in their conference
in their division,
but one, you know, they wind up 10-6, and another team winds up 11-5. That they could lose the conference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, I'll give you an example. I think the Giants did it. It was either the Giants or the Eagles that did it. They went 6-0 in a division, but they were 9-7 or 10-6. And so were the Giants. I mean, the Giants were like 11-5. It was one of the teams. I can't remember who it was, but because it was the Cowboys. It was the Eagles and the Cowboys, I believe. So the Cowboys ended up going to the playoffs that one time because they had the better record, but the division record sucked.
I don't know. We're gonna have to examine that, but good. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's go to another game where it's an AFC East team. It's Buffalo taking on Jacksonville. And this is a very interesting game in my opinion. I mean, a lot of people might say, who cares about it? But I think it's going to be a game that shows a lot of courage and talent for Jacksonville. I'm going to pick Jacksonville to win this game. The reason why I'm picking Jacksonville to win this game is because Chad Henne has been the quarterback. Jacksonville has shown the stay and play football. Buffalo, on the other hand, has looked kind of bad as of late. Steve Johnson even made a comment in the press this week saying that he wished Chan Gailey would let Ryan Fitzpatrick call some audibles at the offensive line. He then retracted the statement or whatever, but
hold on, he don't call audibles? Really?
No, that's according to Stevie Johnson. So,
oh my goodness, what kind of bush league coaching is that?
I don't know, but I think Jacksonville wins this game because I think they've got their stuff together. Their defense has been good. I think Henne is the quarterback they need, at least for right now and next year, in order to change the franchise to respectability. So I'm picking Jacksonville in an upset to beat Buffalo. We got about 10 minutes left alive there, so we're going to breeze through these games, okay?
Okay.
What you got?
Where are they playing?
They're playing in Buffalo.
I'm going with Buffalo. It's cold up there, too. All right.
Okay, so you're picking Buffalo?
Yeah, I'm taking Buffalo. And I was trying to go ahead and let you breeze through it. I didn't want to yak on it too much more.
No, it's all good, but you got to fill time. This is a really important game and a really good game, but it's important for two reasons. Playoff implications and a possible job implication. We're talking about the Colts going to Detroit. Detroit has lost its last 4 games in a row. The Colts are 7-5, I believe. And
they're
right now
7-5. Really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
And they have the inside track to go into the playoffs. If they win this game and go 8-5, and one or two other teams lose, I believe Pittsburgh and somebody else, they can clinch the playoff spot with a win next week. So, on the flip side, Jim Schwartz has been said to have lost all control over the Detroit Lions. And there's speculation that his job might be on the line. If they lose this game to a rookie quarterback and a team with less talent, he might be getting his pink slip at the end of the season as well. With that being said, they're playing in Detroit. I'm going to pick Detroit to win the game because I don't think Andrew Luck is going to be able to will his way through this game. They barely won last week. They won on special teams last week. I think Detroit has the Colts number and wins this week. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Detroit, but I got selfish reasons. I didn't know that they were 7-5. I did not know that. I did not know that they were 7-5.
They have fully outperformed. See, they're not 7-5. Yeah, 7-5. Those 12 games, they're 7-4. I'm sorry, 7-4.
7-4?
Yeah,
wow.
7-4.
Wow.
So, you know, I know you want Mac to lose. You know you want his Lions to lose, but you're picking his Lions. It's all good. Let's move.
I mean, I don't care about him. I don't care about his Lions winning or losing. More than I want to see my quarterback get Rookie of the Year, and with this Bama 7-4, Lord, it don't look good.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. But you know he's getting all type of accolades. All right, let's move on. I mean, but since you brought that up, I'm gonna talk about it real quick. Andy Dalton had a better record than Cam Newton last year, and took his team to the playoffs. But Cam Newton won Rookie of the Year. So
yeah.
There's an opportunity.
Yeah, that's true.
But I highly doubt that will happen this year. If Andrew Luck takes him to the playoffs and the Skins miss the playoffs, Andrew Luck's going to be your rookie.
Because I know this is your show, but you're running out of time, and you need to get to that team that play at FedEx Field.
We get into it. All right, Panthers at Kansas City. You're talking about they might not play the game, but I think they're going to play the game. Pick a winner. I'm going to pick the Panthers. Based upon this situation.
Where they playing? In Kansas City?
Yeah.
Ooh. I'm going with the Panthers. I'm going with you.
Okay. Vikings head to Green Bay. Percy Harvin may not play again this week, but AP has had pretty decent games versus Green Bay, and Green Bay's defense is missing a lot of players. So I'm going to pick... in an upset, Minnesota.
In Green Bay?
In Green Bay.
Nah, you're going to have to go solo on that one, Pimpin. I'm going with Green Bay. Even though playoff implications is better for my Skins if the Vikings win. But, I'm going with Green Bay.
I'm telling you, people run all over. All right, in the last tied game of the NFL, 49ers go to the Rams, and hopefully they won't end in a tie this time. Colin Kaepernick is the starting quarterback who delivers more like an RG3 type of scenario for the Rams, like when the Rams played the Skins, except with a better defense. Even though Steven Jackson is getting his mojo back, I'm going to pick the 49ers to win this game. Who you got?
49ers.
All right. Cardinals go to the Jets. Beanie Wells showed up, scored 2 touchdowns last week. Now his knee's hurting again. The Jets are a sad sack of piece of stuff. Even the fans are saying things. And the players, namely Bart Scott, firing back at the fans. With the dysfunction happening over there in New Jersey, I'm going to pick the Cardinals to get the victory here. Who you got?
I'm gonna go with the Jets. Whenever everybody, you know, blasting them and they all up against the wall and, you know, they seem to pull out a convincing victory whenever they do that. So I'm going with the Jets on this one.
Okay. Buccaneers go to Broncos. This is going to be a really good game. It's the run game of Tampa Bay with a little bit of their passing versus Peyton Manning and that passing offense. No Sean Marino looks to get the start again. So everybody didn't listen to the master plan last week when I told you, do not play Ronnie Hillman. You might want to play No Sean Marino. You better listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. But I don't think that's going to help. This is going to be a very, very, very good game. This is going to be the game of the week. I'm picking the Broncos to win again. It's in Mile High. So I think the altitude is going to be somewhat of an issue for Doug Martin and the Bucks. Dallas Clark gets to see Peyton Manning, but Dallas Clark's not getting passes from Peyton Manning. So that's that. Who you got?
Broncos.
All right. Steelers with Charlie Bassett quarterback goes to Baltimore.
Dude, you killing me. You killing me.
I wish. Come on, man.
You ain't got but, what, 5 minutes left? Lord,
come
have
on,
mercy.
Dude. We've got a few
killing
games left.
Me.
Come on. Come on. Who you picking?
Who? Steelers and who?
The
Steelers
Ravens.
And Ravens?
Yeah.
Ooh. I like
no
the Ravens.
No Big Ben, though.
I like
the
Ravens.
I like the Ravens as well. Without Big Ben, I got the Ravens as well. Bengals go to the Chargers. And my prediction, if the Bengals win this game, North Turner's fired the next day. I'm picking the Bengals.
I don't think they're going to fire him the next day, but I'm going with the Bengals. I'm going with the Bengals.
Browns go to Oakland, where Run DMC makes his return. He's not going to start. Marcell Reese is still starting. Trent Richardson's finding his place. Brandon Weeden's doing pretty well. But I think Oakland's going to pull out the victory in this game. What do you got?
I'm taking the Browns on that one.
Okay. Game Sunday night, Eagles at Cowboys. DeMarco Murray returns. That boy Bryce Brown for the Eagles looked pretty daggone good Monday night. But he's going against the Cowboys defense this time. The Eagles are dejected. I feel bad for Andy Reid, and I'm picking the Cowboys to win this game.
I think the Cowboys redeem themselves, and the Eagles revert back to being the laughing stock, a team that they've always been. And, you know, the Philadelphia fans just don't know, just did not know when they had it good, while it was good. But, you know, just as, you know, history states with the Eagles, no championships, no Super Bowls. Thank you very much.
All right, last game of the weekend. The New York Football Giants comes to FedEx Field to face Robert Griffin and the Washington Redskins. Last game, it went down to the last minute of the game. The Redskins defense has seemingly come back to life, but this is the first team that has its second opportunity to face Robert Griffin III. Will they make the necessary changes to shut him down and the Redskins offense? That's the question. I think they'll play a lot more zone and force Robert to throw the ball in tight spots. I hate to say it, but I think the Giants sweep the Redskins.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that, because not only is this the second time for the Giants to have an opportunity at Robert Griffin, it is also a second time for Robert Griffin to come back and play against the Giants, you know. And I that's what I'm talking about, man. All that time you was running your mouth about all them whack goddamn games. Now I got 10 seconds about to talk about my Redskins. It ain't funny, Slim. It ain't funny because I stopped you and told you, and you're like, "What do we do?"
You're wasting time now.
So what? It don't matter. I don't want 10 seconds. I need 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? To break this down. Oh, Jesus.
We're going to go over time, ladies and gentlemen, with this analysis. So we appreciate you all listening to the program. Go ahead. Catch us next Saturday, 1 p.m. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh my God! But Robert Griffin and the Redskins, I think they're going to sock it to these the Giants this time. I mean, I think they had a little they were a little jittery, you know what I mean? And they still were in the game along with four or five turnovers in that game. It still was a close game. Redskins, if they have under, you know, two turnovers in the game, they should win it. If they have no turnovers, it's going to be a stomp. I look for a shootout in this game. This is going to be a very high-scoring game. You know, Eli's got that clutch gene, but this young man's got more of a clutch gene. It's just who's going to end up with the ball last type of thing. I'm going with the Redskins on this one. Definitely.
All right. Hopefully I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, but we'll see, because we really need them to make a playoff push, and to win this game versus the Giants would really, really help their chances.
If they win this game, then, you know, their playoff run, it becomes much more legitimate. Because you've got Minnesota that's in the hunt. We beat them. You've got Tampa Bay in the hunt. We've beaten them. The only two teams that are anomalies is Seattle and Green Bay.
I'll say this. Seattle has a better shot because they play weaker opponents. But with the way things are shaking out for the Redskins, they've got Baltimore left, they've got Philly, Dallas, and I think it's one or two other teams they got left after this game. So if they win this game, they have a legitimate shot at winning the division, not just getting a playoff spot. So this game has big, big implications.
I don't foresee, honestly, I don't foresee the Redskins doing either one of these things. I really don't. You know, in all honesty, I would just like to see them make a good push. I mean, because in my opinion, they've done what they needed to do for this year. I would like to see them make this playoff run and make this push. And I don't think they're going to give up and, you know, and just, you know, half-step it in there. I think they're going to give it a good run. I foresee them winning this game, but in order for them to get to the playoffs, it's going to really depend on that Baltimore game, because the Redskins need every one of these games that they're playing. They need every one of them to walk into the playoffs. And I don't see them beating the Ravens. What did you say?
They play Cleveland as well.
Oh yeah, those two games are very, very, very pivotal. They got to have both of them, and I don't think they're going to get both of them. They're going to get Cleveland, but they ain't getting the Ravens. It ain't happening.
I don't know. I think they might beat them. Excuse me. They already lost to Pittsburgh. I think that. With the Ravens situation right now, with their defense being so banged up, Ray Lewis is targeting coming back the week before they play the Redskins. But
you mean the week after? Week after?
Yeah, the week after they play the Redskins. So their corners are garbage. Robert is going to be able to throw the ball on them. Running on them without Ray Lewis would be a whole lot better, you know, because Baltimore is the 27th ranked team in the NFL versus the run. And with their two starting corners gone, and they're using their third and fourth corners as starting cornerbacks, oh, yeah. Ed Reed might be able to get Robert, but them corners aren't going to get him. So, you know, I think they have a very good shot at beating the Ravens. I mean, if you saw the Ravens last week versus San Diego, they shouldn't have won that game. San Diego gave them that game. And the Ravens play a lot better than San Diego. So, you know, with that being said, I got to get ready to get out of here. And take my wife on her weekend.
Do what she say do. You just shut up and do what she say do.
You shut up. You know what? Whatever. I got this planned out. I'm getting mine.
You need to let her oversee that plan. Cause you know how short sighted you are. Need somebody with some good intuition to look over your plans, man. Because I don't know.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening to Fantasy Sports and Politics on Blog Talk Radio, hosted by me. It's me, it's your boy FSP, and this week's co-host, because Jerry had to work, was my cousin Mikhail. See, I said it right for you. I know it was right. My cousin, my real life blood cousin, sat in. We had a good discussion, no arguing. We just discussed some things. And you can check us out, or you can check his show out here on Blog Talk Radio. It's called Grown Soul and Real Talk, every Wednesday, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio, where they will discuss any and every topic under the sun. And you might want to take, you know, any sensitivity pills or emotional pills you have, and go to the show, because there are no cut cards on that show. But on Sundays, you have the Master Plan with Jerry ATM Taylor giving you great information. If you've been listening to him all year, you've been very successful in your fantasy leagues.
Is he going to be in tomorrow?
Yeah, he's going to be in tomorrow. He had to work today.
Goodness,
he had to work yesterday.
Thank goodness, man.
Hey. You know
so
what? I need to hang up
without
on you
him.
Right. I need to hang up on you right now. I'm going to be respectful. So shut up. All right. Anyway, so tomorrow, Jerry comes on here at 10 a.m. giving great information on your fantasy starts and sits and all that good stuff. So, you know, the pros actually do listen to Jerry. I've got it on good word that some pros do listen to him. Then you will not have Kim Fun coming on the air for the next month and a half. Kim is on a Tibetan journey. She's going to climb Mount Everest. She is one of, I think, two or three women in the history of this religion to be invited to become a full monk. So
wow.
On this,
and you still
journey,
ain't taking no pictures of her and put her up on your blog
Black
page.
Black hasn't put it together. Black hasn't put it together. I'm gonna try to do something, but we sent it to Black.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
mm-hmm.
She's gonna be gone for the next month and a half, so her show will not be airing. Sorry for that, but she's a talent. Then on Thursdays, you got the Cruise Show, FSP Cruise Show with Jeff Black and Jerry. And they hold it down just before the NFL game and talk, and chop it up with you and give you what they need to give you. And you guys get it. You love it because you're always coming back. Then on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you got that wild one, Mac the Militant Williams with No Chaser.
Militant.
Jerry.
Militant.
Me and Jerry do that
militant
thing. And
fool,
yes,
fool ain't, is nothing about that fool militant. Nothing.
Can I promo the show? Can I just promo the show?
Yeah, but just take that adjective out.
Oh, my gosh.
Just take that out. I mean, you know what? But for real, you need to take that junk and stop calling it No Chaser. Call that junk Oreo cookies and milk. Oreo cookies and chocolate milk. Yeah, that's what you call it.
Will you shut up? No Chaser, 7 p.m. My cousin. I told you, you and him need a show together. I would gladly give you two a show together.
Nah.
I would gladly give you a show together.
I couldn't do it. I could not do it. No, sir.
Well, anyway, that show, highly controversial. Mac and Jerry hold it down every Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate all of our listens and our listeners. Like I said, welcome to the 120,000 plus listenership club, because, you know, it took you a while, but it's all good.
It ain't
but anyway.
Taking me that long. I ain't even we just passed 2 years. It's the second year.
Okay. right. Well, it took us a little longer. We've been on the air for 3 years. But anyway, we want to thank everybody for listening and supporting us. And if you want to give us some Powerball money, or if you want to, you know, set us up to have our... that, just hit me up. Shoot me an email.
I'm so mad I ain't hit that. No. So
it's all right. It's okay. It's all right. We can try to get some money somewhere else. We'll figure it out. Ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, give your parting shot, Mike, before I get out of here.
I don't really have one except for on Friday nights, remember, Oreo and chocolate milk. Peace and blessings.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to...
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Want to get ready to rumble?
You want to talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.